Foreplay. With Pierce McCarthy. Let's talk about the four songs that you wrote that are most personal to you. Foreplay.
Hey there, and you're very welcome to episode 19 of Foreplay. This week's episode is also the final one of the first season, as this guy needs to go away and recharge the batteries. However, I'm delighted to say that episode 1 of season 2 will be dropping on Sunday, the 20th of June. Fear not, though, as in the coming 8 weeks, there'll be lots of stuff coming to entertain your ears. Now, back to this week, and my guest has a career in the rock and roll industry stretching back to the 1980s. From forming and being the drummer of Heavy Petten to now fronting and rocking it out with Burnt Out Wreck, this man has shared the stage and some champagne with the likes of Kiss and Ozzy Osbourne, to name but a few. So our virtual journey this week takes us across the pond to the UK, where I'm delighted to be joined by Gary Moat. Hey Gary, how's it going, bud? You're very welcome to Foreplay. How are you doing, sir?
Yes, I'm doing great. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So how have things been for you for the last year, music-wise? What have you been up to?
Well, obviously, nothing live and basically just writing new material whenever I felt like it, which was not as much as I used to, you know. With the situation, you know, you're not in the mood for writing new songs, really.
Yeah, I guess because a few of the musicians I've spoken to, at the very beginning, I think a lot of them were kind of writing stuff to do with being in lockdown, and now a lot of them have just moved away from it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, can you imagine the world with a million bands all writing depressing songs about lockdown? It'd be great next year, wouldn't it? Listening to that load of shite. It'd be great.
Yeah, it certainly would make for a depressing charts, wouldn't it?
Not half,
So, Gary, I invited you to come on to the podcast to chat about the four songs that you've written that are most personal to you. Now, we're going to focus on songs from your latest project, from the two albums, from Swallow in 2017 and This Is Hell in 2019. So the first song that you've picked is a song called Dead or Alive. Why have you picked this one?
Well, it's a real good up-tempo tune, you know, gets your head going, your foot tapping, and there was nothing quite like that on the first album, Swallow. So as soon as I started playing the riff, I thought, yeah, I'm going to have to liven the beat up a bit, you know. And so it took a while, but, you know, I'm an old man. I like the slow pace, the 120 beats per minute, you know.
What I love too about your music, and what I always say, what's lacking in music today is a good guitar solos, and they're full of it. It's proper classic rock.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I set out to do it way back years ago. You know, you just write a good tune and good choruses, good lead guitar playing.
So when did your musical journey begin, Gary?
Right away back when I was about 11, you know, 9, 10, 11, watching Top of the Props and beating your mum's pots and pans with wooden spoons, you know, I want to be a drummer.
Yeah, because you're somebody who's moved from behind the kit to the front of a band now, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, that came about back in 1991 when myself and Gordon from Heavy Petten had a band called Mother's Ruin starting. And we wrote a pile of tunes for that. And after Heavy Petten had split up, I just became the vocalist and instead of playing the drums, you know. So we were writing the tunes all the while, so it made sense, you know. It was my voice that was on it when we were demoing them, so why try and find anybody else, you know?
You're actually the second drummer that I know of from a band that's been successful that was the main songwriter, because you were the main songwriter with Heavy Petten. Of course, the other being Neil Peart from Rush.
Neil Peart.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Back in the day, he was a big influence, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, we'll take a listen to the first song that you've chosen, so, and we'll come back and chat some more about it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so you're listening to Foreplay Podcast. Gary Moat is my guest this week, and this is the first song that he's chosen. This is Dead or Alive.
Good and you're fine, fully loaded, overdrive. So
Dead or Alive. That is some tracks or some guitar, some axe playing there at the end.
Yeah, that's all down to a man called Adrian Dunn. He was the guitar player on that album and on Swallow. He left the band 2020 in February, just before we were due to go up to Scotland and play a couple of gigs, and he decided he had enough. And so he's gone.
He's gone. You're a Glasgow man originally, are you?
Yeah, most definitely.
The scene must have been something special in Scotland back in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You know, Glasgow itself, goodness sake, there were so many bands. Same as over in Ireland, you know, same as in London, you know. It was just crazy, you know. Everybody was all coming out, happening, young people. But the thing was, they were all really good, you know. There wasn't an awful lot of rubbish coming out, you know. And so it was a difficult time trying to get signed instead of someone else, as it were. So we were all battling away, you know. So, yeah, great times.
Now, you said 11 years of age is kind of top of the pops, banging the pots and pans. So what was the first band that you got into, Gary?
Myself and Gordon from Henry Payne, you know, we went to the same school. So Gordon said to me one day when we were about, I don't know, 13, something like that. He said, you know, here you play the drums. And I'm like, yeah, here you play the guitar. So the rest is history. And we stayed together all the way right up, right through, you know.
Yeah.
Signed the record deal for Heavy Petting and done all the stuff that we'd done. And then, as I said, moved on to Mother's Ruin. And now I'm in Burnt Out Wreck.
And the Heavy Petting early days, what was that like? I mean, a young fellow who'd watched, been top of the pops, that had inspired you to get into music. And here you now, with your mate, who you'd been friends with from a very early age. And now you were in this band that were making some serious moves. That must have been an exciting time, was it?
Most definitely, you know. I mean, you know, it was just crazy, mind-blowing, you know. We went in to do our first album with Brian May from Queen as the producer, you know, which is, you know, everybody loved Queen, obviously. The band loved Queen. And we went on tour with Ozzy. We went on tour with Kiss within like a couple of months of each other, you know, and then off we went to the States and toured with Motley Crue and Rat and Saxon, you know, and Accept. I mean, it was just bonkers. 1983, 1984 was just full on. And we were only like 22, 23
wow.
at the time. So you can imagine how it affected us. Too much alcohol, obviously.
Yeah, what was touring like with the likes of these huge bands that you guys toured with back then?
Well, you know, it was just great fun, you know, being the first on the bill, you know, and just off we went. You know, we were drunk all day long, all night long. We went on stage drunk, you know, and, you know, we don't do that these days, obviously, you know. Yeah. I'm sober all the way when I hit the stage, you know. But way back then, yeah, you didn't care because you were young, you could handle it. You were just out there having a blast. But yeah, I mean, Kiss, I mean, imagine playing Wembley with 10,000 people staring at you, you know, and I'm hiding behind my drums thinking, oh my God, look at the size of this crowd. This is just crazy. I feel like a wee mouse back here, you know. So yeah, great, you know, and it just all kept rolling along, as it were, you know, and
yeah,
made us who we are today, really, you know?
Yeah. And what were the guys from Kiss like? I mean, you were this up-and-coming band. Were they open to you guys? And were they good for giving advice and whatnot?
Yeah, definitely. Gene Simmons, you know, he was in our dressing room, you know, before we went on stage out every night on that tour, for instance, you know. And when my single came out, it went into the charts. Not a really high position, but it went in a good position. And he bought us a bottle of champagne to celebrate and stuff like that. You know, it's like, it's just so long ago, you know. It's like three lifetimes ago nearly now, you know. It's
yeah, like, but happy days. A good start to any career, eh? I suppose more than anything, it's left you with so many memories.
Yeah, it's a shame it didn't leave me with money, but memories is great, yeah.
Yeah, memories doesn't pay the gas bill, though, I guess. So the first song that we listened to there, Gary, Dead or Alive, what's that song about?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just the thrill of the getting on your motorbike or getting in your fast car and just putting your foot down, and all of a sudden there's a slight mistake and boom, off he goes, whoever it is that's driving, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just the thrill of the big engines, you know.
Yeah.
Petrolheads.
I love the line, up ahead, cross the line, flying past it, feeling fine, but the brakes just failed, crashed and burned against the rails.
Yeah, it's crazy what you can come up with, isn't it? When you're forced into it. Write a song, quick.
Okay, so we'll move on to the second song that you've picked today, and we're going to go with, from the first album, Swallow, which came out in 2017 for Burnt Out Wrecked. This is the title track. So why did you pick this one, Gary?
Well, it was written in 2016, that song, you know, so it was a fairly new one. And it just started coming out, you know, and it was all just, there's an awful lot of anger in my voice singing that song, you know. I'm really spitting it out, you know, and I think that was probably Johnny Rotten's fault, isn't it? From back in the day, you know. I used to love the Sex Pistols, but there you go. And it's just about the state of the world then, you know. And I mean, for goodness sake, look at the state of the world now. But back in 2016, 2015, 16, you know, it was all about that, all about sort of the politics of it, and just that nobody knew what the hell they were doing out there, did they? And, you know, and you're meant to be leading us all. Well, that's great. Look at the mess of the world, you know.
Yeah.
And my God, look at it now. So it fits in well with these days as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just love the way that it swaggers along. It's a cracking tune, and that's all about it, you know.
Yeah. You say the state of the world now. What do you think can be done to make the world a better place?
I don't know. I'm too old. I think we'll leave that up to all the younger generation. They think they bloody know it all, but, you know, they don't know nothing, you know. And I don't know, you know, I just write songs.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. That's a good political answer, actually. You should have been a rock and roll politician, maybe.
Yeah, try and swear a bit.
Okay, we'll have a listen to your second song. This is Gary Moat from Burnt Out Wreck, and this is Swallow.
Oh man.
Trek. When did you guys start your journey?
It's summer 2016. I decided to go in and record some songs, you know, and at the same time, I changed the name from Mother's Ruin that we were using way back when, you know, or I was using for the songs that were written from way back in 1991. So I changed it to Burnt Out Wreck because there was too many things associated with Mother's Ruin out there in the world. And so I decided to look for something original. So came up with Burnt Out Wreck. So yeah, myself and, as I said, Adrian, the guitar player, we went in and to the studio and, you know, I played drums and bass, rhythm guitar and sang all the bits. We had a couple of guys, played a couple of pieces and, you know, some other tunes, different instruments. And then after we recorded it, we started looking for guys to be in a live band to go play, you know, and we found our band and got rehearsing by the late 2016, and my first gig was at the Minehead in Somerset, sorry, in January 2017. That was my first gig.
How was it?
It was a really good gig, yeah. I mean, there was plenty of people there. It was a big, massive stage at the Butlins, down there was a Butlins, and just fantastic, you know.
You know, when you've been known and associated with other bands, so then when you're starting a completely new project yourself, is there nerves involved when you're bringing that to the public of, Jesus, will they actually like us?
Definitely, you know, as I say, that first gig, you know, we were going out there to about 500 people or something in the hall, and we'd only ever been in a little rehearsal room together, and this was a whole new thing, and you're just thinking, hey, how's this going to go? And, like, I think half the band, you know, I sounded like a gnu, you know, I mean, I was just, like, so blocked up. I was drinking hot tea and Lemsip, you know, honey and on stage, and you know, and the audience were like, "What do you mean you've got the cold?" And I'm out there screaming my head off like an old woman, you know. But then, you know, and yeah, nervous as hell because obviously I already thought, you know, I'm going to blow this because I really have got the cold bad, you know. I'm not one of these people that goes on stage and or every day, oh my throat, oh my throat, oh my. I can't sing, you know, I'm not one of those singers, you know.
Yes.
No, so yeah, I mean, there's nerves every gig, you know, every time you go out there, you know, you're just thinking, right, come on, get this right, you know, and remember to smile. don't get so into it that you've got your eyes shut or you stood there, you know, and you just love it. The audiences are just great, you know, they make you relax and you see them smiling and singing back to you and that's it, you're... Yeah, marvellous. It's brilliant.
And obviously you've built on your success now as Burnt Out Wreck. I mean, with a second album out now, you're kind of finding your groove.
Yeah, I mean, it took a while, you know. I mean, as I say, first gig in 2017, the whole of that year was just like every weekend or every other weekend we were away playing somewhere up and down the length and breadth of Britain. We never did make it to Ireland, but that doesn't mean to say that we don't want to because... Yeah. Good God, I'd love to go to Ireland, and you know, I've never played in Ireland. But the second album, I just thought, well, we've been sort of playing now for 2 years, and we need to start writing songs, you know. So obviously, I write the songs, and you know, I sing the songs, so I need to write them for the way that I sing, you know. And so that was it. So yeah, it took a bit of a while, but you know, eventually out it came in late 2019. So. We got a couple of gigs in and then bang, stopped.
Yeah. I don't think anybody had any idea what was coming down the road last year, did they?
No. I mean, most definitely. Like I said earlier there, and our last gig was Edinburgh. So Glasgow and Edinburgh, we went up there in February last year and we came back and we had another couple of gigs lined up and it got stopped. You know, and as I said, my guitar player left and I got a hold of this other new guy. His name's Richard and he was, you know, learn the songs quick, you know, forcing him, really putting pressure on him. Obviously, we were supposed to go and play a gig in Nuneaton with a band called The Treatment, you know, and that was going to be a great show and we were really looking forward to that and trying to get him up to speed. And he hasn't even met the band. He's only met two of us, myself and Miles, the other guitar player. And we had a strum along for about an hour and a half one day, and that was it, you know. And he went away home and learned all the tunes at home. And I talked to him, you know, like this, obviously, on the internet, you know, and just go through things. But so he joined a band that he never got to play, and he's still been sat there for over a year now, you know, and he's just like twiddling his thumbs, you know, pulling his hair out.
Dying to get out and play, obviously.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, he's raring to go, you know, as we all are, of course.
Yeah. Now, the third song that we're going to chat about, and it's also from the first album, Swallow. This is a song called Flames. Why did you pick this one, Gary?
Well, Flames just is a real great, dark, slow-paced, banging, heavy rock song, you know. And it goes down a storm live. People just seem to love it, you know, because it is a real hard-hitting song.
When you do write, do you write for live?
I think that probably coming from the 80s, it's kind of built into you, maybe, you know, that you know, like I said earlier, you go for the big choruses, and or I go for big choruses and stuff, and I just like the straight ahead blues rock sort of style that it is, like sounding like AC/DC sort of style, you know. And that comes down to obviously my voice, and that's Bon Scott's fault for being such a bloody great singer in the first place, and I just loved him, you know. So, you know, that's kind of where I learned how to sing, is listening to him.
That voice, that's the thing. I've always been amazed and blown away by people who sing in the style that you sing in. Because donkeys years ago, I would have been involved in bands. And I mean, I grew up listening to music in the 80s, always wishing I could have that killer rock voice. And I just never could. But you're one of the lucky ones that has. And then you stuck yourself behind a set of drums for so long.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a singer. I mean, okay, I always wanted to be a drummer, but it doesn't stop you from being a songwriter, does it? You know, and it's like I say before to other people, if Heavy Vent hadn't split up back in the 80s, then I'd still be the drummer, and I wouldn't be out fronting my own band, because it didn't interest me, you know. Didn't interest me.
And for a band that were, you know, you had success in the 80s, I guess, you know, you toured with some serious bands. Why did it all end?
Just the music scene was changing. All the record companies were desperately trying to get the money back that they had pumped into all the bands that hadn't had that big single that was a sort of worldwide hit, raked in like millions, you know. And there's so many bands who have got the same sad tale as myself, if going back that way, you know. And you nearly got there, you'd done all the right things, but I think a lot of people as well didn't want others, like a lot of record companies trying to push you into having other people's songs, you know. And yeah, that worked for Bon Jovi, didn't it? That's great, you know, and look where they got to, you know. But it's a lot of people just don't want to do that, you know. It's like you're doing that forever. You're growing up as a little kid and you're thinking, right, I'm writing songs, I'll do this. You get to a record company and they start treating you like, you know, telling you, nah, you need to do this, you need to do that. You just throw your finger straight up at them, you know, no, sorry, we're not doing that.
The people that are usually telling you to do that couldn't play an instrument to save their lives.
No, couldn't.
But they look good in a suit.
Well, no, not necessarily, you know.
True that. Okay, well, we have a listen to this next song, so. We'll be right back. some serious air guitar playing here during that song. I can see you, but thankfully you can't see me right now.
Yes. I'm afraid that is that's a bit of a masterpiece as far as the lead guitar's playing and that, you know.
Oh,
that's some cookie, but he's not in the band anymore.
That's the joys of rock and roll, my friend, isn't it?
Aye.
They come, they go. So when you were a youngster growing up and getting into music, obviously AC/DC, as you alluded to there, would have been definitely one of your influences. Who else were you listening to and who else influenced you in your early days of your career?
Oh, I mean, growing up, you know, same as everybody from the UK, you know, it's whatever was on top of the pops, you know, what else did we have to watch? You know, it all came out of there, didn't it? You know,
yeah.
Anything and everything, you know, I mean, goodness sake, you know, just obviously people like Matt Bolan, you know, T-Rex, Sweet, you know, Slade, all those kind of bands, Queen, you know, Status Quo, mad for Status Quo, obviously, you know, Thin Lizzy, you know, we just, and then, like I said earlier, Sex Pistols going forward a bit, you know, and
yeah,
just everything. A big, just everybody was into so much, so many different types of music back then in the '70s as well. It's, you know, so yeah, there's loads and loads of influences.
What's your thoughts on the music scene of today, Gary?
The music scene, in what way? Rock music or just general hip-hop?
do you know what? We'll go with both. What's your thoughts on rock music today? Who do you like to listen to?
I don't.
Okay.
You know, that's a strange one. You know, yeah, I'll sometimes, you know, when I'm in chef mode in the kitchen, you know, I'll put the radio on and listen to whatever rock radio I can get my hands on and, you know, and see what's coming out. But I don't really like that kind of music. I live in the past, really, as far as music is concerned, you know. Yeah. I think that most people do, you know. And obviously we go and play festivals, we see people, new people coming up, coming through. Yeah, there's some good bands, but nothing that I would sit down and buy an album or something, you know. Nothing really does me that way. I think the music industry killed that part of me off a long time ago, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. But you still obviously have a love, and as we'd say here in Ireland, you obviously have a graw for music still, because here you are still playing.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I mean, I'm going to be 60 in May, you know, I'm an old man. But I do love music, you know, but it's from the past, the music that I love, you know. Sometimes you hear something good, sometimes on the radio or something, but it's not necessarily out and out rock. It could be anything, you know.
Yeah, there ain't no Led Zeppelins or Thin Lizzy's around anymore, is there? I mean, there ain't no modern versions of them coming out these days.
No, not at all, you know. But, you know, it's like back in the 70s, it's just all of that kind of music, you know. Like I remember going to see the Boomtown Rats and the Glasgow Apollo, you know.
Yeah.
Bouncing around like a blooming head case, you know. I still had long hair and stuff, but, you know, there he is up there. What is he in his pajamas playing the blooming keyboards and stuff? You know, and things like that, you know, and the Stranglers. And I loved all of that stuff, you know, and still love all the music, because that's when you were alive growing up, isn't it? A teenager, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hugh Cornwell actually played a gig here about 2 years ago. And it was quite cool, actually, because the first half of the gig was his new album that he was there to promote, which I have to say was very, very good. However, the second half of the show was all the old stuff, all the hits that we knew. And they'd done this real funky version of Golden Brown. But it was just, here I was, standing in this venue where I go to see loads of bands play, and I'm looking up going, Jesus, there's your man from the Stranglers. This is so cool. He still loves it. The band he has around him were savage as well.
Oh, yeah. Just marvellous, you know. That's it, you know. If I could go back in time, I go back and watch Ian Dury and the Blockheads, you know. I remember going to see them live.
Was he good?
Just standing there, same thing. Oh, yeah. The whole band, it was just like they were from a different planet, that band.
Yeah.
You know, the whole joint was rocking. I mean, goodness sake.
What's the best gig you ever went to as a punter?
Oh, best gig as a punter? Maybe the rock festival that happened away back in Scotland at the Bear Park, you know, and they had people like Crocus and Saxon.
Wow.
You know, and on and we just bundled into a van, as you do when you're about, well, we must have been about 19 or something like that at the time, 18, 19, and just went away for the weekend and just got lots of beer and just sat there watching that, you know, and just thinking how amazing it must be to be on a stage like that. So, yeah, probably something like that.
And when you got to be on a stage like that, then that's kind of dreams come true stuff, isn't it?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, Heavy Pen. You, we walked out 64,000 people at Reading. You know,
wow.
What's going on here? You know, it's just mental.
That's bring a change of underwear kind of scenario, isn't it?
Aye, definitely. You know, one of the things I remember of that day was running around with Mama's boys, you know, and backstage. We got to meet them, and that was, I think that was the first time we'd met them. And, you know, it was just, it's great, all that kind of stuff, isn't it? You know, you just remember all these daft wee snippets of what happened, you know?
Yeah, I have a good friend here in Cork. His name is Jerome Rimson, and he's originally from Detroit. And he would have been best friends now with Phil Lynott, and he actually played with Phil Lynott, not with Thin Lizzy, but he played with Phil Lynott. And he would have played with Van Morrison. And I remember always saying to him one time, it was like, what's the coolest gig you ever played, Jay? And he said they played, I think it was the Isle of Wight, and Van Morrison was headlining it. And there was something like 80 to 100,000 people. And he said, I'm standing there. And he said, as far as I could see, all I could see was people. He said, I just couldn't see the end of it. And he said he proper needed a change of underwear at the end of that. But it was one of the most amazing experiences he ever.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, of course, we can believe it, you know.
And what's the best gig that you've ever played, or what's one of the most memorable ones that you always think back on that you played yourself as an artist?
Probably with Kiss, Stafford Bingley Hall. Stafford Bingley Hall was just like a big, massive cattle market or something, but it was enormous, this place, and the stage was right away up, made of scaffolding poles, and it was just like, you know, plywood boards on top of it, and the whole bloody thing moved. and when we got on there and I looked out, I just thought, you know, we're playing away and a couple of songs into it, and then the crowd are going bonkers, and it was like a sea of people, like waves, you know, and they were all sort of pushing forward. This was way before they had mosh pits, but they were all pushing forward and then going back sideways. And I thought, they're just going to kill us. The whole stage is going to come down and we're all going to die, you know. So, you know, it was a great gig. I mean, you know, we had a blast, you know. We had a blast at every gig we went and played. We just got on and gave it large and that was it, you know. Yeah. But yeah, probably that one, just the feeling of, I think we're going to die.
At least being the drummer, you were at the back, so you could jump off the stage first anyway and let the others in front of you.
Hopefully.
Just grab your snare. You'd have to grab your snare and your cymbals, though. So the fourth song that you picked to have a chat about this week, Gary, is also from your second album, This Is Hell, and it's the title track. Why did you pick this one? And what's the song about?
Well, what's the song about? I told you that my kids would kill me. oops. There you go. So
I think that explains it enough.
I started writing This Is Hell, the song itself. I mean, I come up with that chorus and in the first verse, and I had that and the guitar riff that goes with it. I mean, probably about 2006 or something like that, you know.
Okay.
And then, like I do with most of my songs, I'll just shelve it and move on quickly to the next one because I get bored with things, and then I'll just leave it. And as long as I know it's good, and I'll put it away, and then I'll come back to that one day and get out and tinker with it. So kind of it came from that, you know. And I suppose the background to that would be that we had just moved house, you know, around about 2004. And then a couple of years later, you know, it's just all of a sudden, it was just that verse was coming out of me for some reason. You know, the pressures of it. Yeah. Oh, my God. Catching up with me, you know. So, it sounds as though it was written for the pandemic, you know, but it wasn't. And it's just such a monster of a track. And when you get into the middle of it again, it's just like, what is going on in here, you know, and how did we manage to create this, you know, but we really did in the studio, and we had such fun doing it. It was just fantastic, you know.
What's your favourite place, stage or studio?
Probably stage, now that I've got rid of all the real nervy being out the front and singing, you know, like, you know, I soon get rid of that, you know, when I realised that everybody was enjoying it, you know, like I said earlier, you know, and because you always think, what are they looking at you, are they laughing at you, what do they think, you know, you're an old man up here and you're screaming away like an old woman, like I said before, and you just think, are they getting this, you know, and, you know, so as soon as you get rid of that, you know, I've got my heels are holding me on the stage because I'm hanging off the front of it, you know, and I'm just like, you're going to go off of here and break your bloody neck, man. What are you doing, you know? It's right up the front, you know, and so, yeah, it's great fun, you know. Mm. But equally, I love going into the studio and the demos that I make on my own at home. Once you go into the studio, especially on This Is Hell, the second album, because all the guys that joined the band played on that album and they weren't on the first one. So it made it such a better album. It's just, it was just great to hear it. And it just totally blew me away with the things that they were doing on there, you know?
You know, when you write a song, right, and you have an idea the way you want the song to go, and you'd obviously do your demo at home and then you'll bring it to studio to the rest of the lads. Are you possessive over your songs, or are you the kind of songwriter that it's like, okay, lads, I have this idea, and give the rest of the band the freedom to throw what they want on it?
Not possessive, no, but, you know, it takes so long for me to refine things that I get it down to, I've got the whole thing there, and I just give it to them. So they just need to learn that the way that I do it, but then the way that they play will slightly differ. So that will just change it slightly. Mm. And especially on the drumming front of it, from my drummer, Paul Gray, who's just a fantastic drummer, you know. And so he, in This Is Hell, he came up with all that middle part. You know, I had it a sort of basic thing, and then he started adding all these drum fills into it, and it sounded like hell itself exploded. You know, it's just thunder, you know. It's just brilliant, you know. So that's what I say. It's just, you go in and you think, oh, what's going to happen? And then bang, you get that, and yeah.
Originally, you're a drummer, and drumming, I guess, was always your first love. Have you found it hard to kind of let that go, in the sense that, you know, you've written a song, you've got a drummer in the band, yet you were also a drummer, but you kind of have to step back and let him do his thing. Did you find that hard to do?
Sort of. Sort of, you know, I mean, you know, we have had words, you know, yeah. So to speak, you know, let's say. And, but at the end of the day, you know, there's a place for everything within the song, you know, and so, you know, you can't be having a drummer playing a drum solo whilst you're trying to sing. It's just not on, is it? So everything is structured within the song, and there's a gap for everything, so.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, he'll maybe just play a couple of bass drum things different to the way that I heard it, and then when I hear him doing it, I go, great, next.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't go, oh no, forget that. You know, as long as it's, you know, as long as it keeps rocking and it keeps flowing nice, then that's it. That's the main thing, you know.
Because one of the bands of today that I love would be the Foo Fighters, and I always kind of wondered, poor Taylor Hawkins at the beginning, you're coming in and Dave Grohl is your frontman, and sure, everybody knows who Dave Grohl is. That must have been a hard situation for him, but I guess, like every true band, they worked it out.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's the same, mate. Like you said earlier, you know, drummers that become singers, you know, it's like Phil Collins as well, you know.
Yeah.
Imagine the drummers that play with him, and then up they step, you know, and yeah.
Okay, we'll take a listen to your fourth song. So this is from the album This Is Hell, and this is the title track.
We'll be right back.
I'd say that's some song live. Say it's good fun.
Yeah, yeah, and then some. You know, I just need to get one of those little clicker buttons that you used to be able to buy in a lucky bag, you know, that goes... that's meant to be the gates of hell banging shut, you know.
You've had a career that's spanned over 40 years now. Looking back, what are some of the memories that will always stay with you, Gary?
Definitely signing the first record deal, you know, which was to Polydor Records in London. Obviously, every band's dream is to get there and get that done. And that was a really big thing for us, you know, for anyone. So, yeah, that, obviously meeting all the idols, you know, so to speak, you know, and standing at the side of the stage watching them playing every night, you know, like Jakey Lee and Ozzy's band. I mean, that man is just one hell of a guitar player, you know, just awesome. Yeah, just... being there, being on stage with these bands, you know, watching them and stuff, and meeting them, and yeah, just the things that happens round about all that, I suppose, you know, going to different countries, and yeah, it was just incredible, really, you know. Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, so let's assume that within the next 12 months the world is going to get better. What's the plans for you and Burnt Out Wreck going forward?
Well, the most immediate thing is really that I've written a load of songs, and we just need to try and get them, or I need to try and get them finished, obviously, and get into a studio and get them recorded and get the third album out. You know, it just needs to happen. But having said that, This Is Hell didn't get promoted the way that it should have done. And because going live, we didn't go live. So when we do go out live, it will be all about playing the songs from that album mainly, you know, because the band were just gagging to play them, as it were, you know. We'd just been in, done it, recorded it, and very excited to take it out. And people's reaction to it when we did was great. So I'm looking forward to getting out and doing that myself, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we do have some gigs that have rolled over from last year, some festivals at the end of the year, and hopefully these things will be allowed to go ahead, and hopefully they won't let us all out and everybody runs around and we end up locked down again. That would be just fantastic, wouldn't it?
You guys, though, seem to be moving at a good rate over there, we say, in comparison to here in Ireland. And I mean, if it's to be believed, I mean, a lot of things are going to start opening back up soonish. Gigs are going to be happening before the year ends with you guys over there, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, I live in Northamptonshire, you know. It's like, I don't live up in Scotland. So if they start opening it up, then, well, we just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I'm just looking forward to Bannatyne's gym opening up, you know. Get back to the swimming, you know. That's all I want, you know.
Yeah, well, is that what you miss the most through all of this?
Going to the gym, going swimming, you know. I really do. It's really, really important that you keep yourself going that way, you know, or it is for me, you know.
Yeah.
As I said, I'm an old man, you know, I've got hip problems, you know, and it's starting to get beyond a joke, you know.
Yeah.
It's just bonkers.
Yeah, when we get to a certain vintage, because I'm not too far behind you, but I guess I would have been a bit of a hellraiser back in the day. And now the more vintage I'm becoming, I'm like my temple is a body kind of guy, and I have people that are kind of raising their eyebrows, looking at me going, really, you? And I'm like, yeah, me, because I can't go on like that forever.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, I'm not giving a drink up, not at all. But, you know, I need to go swimming, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely, you know. So yeah, hopefully we'll get out and get gigging, and we've got, obviously, everybody has this gigs planned for 2022, you know, so we'll do that and see how it goes, you know. But the only other thing that we've got going on is the alcohol that we're involved in. It's called Burnt Out Wreck, obviously. We have a cider and we have an ale and we have a beer spirit.
Have you?
Yes. Look, you can see it on the camera, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Right. Now this is a 41% beer spirit.
Oh.
And it's called Burnt Out Rex Swallow.
Wow, that's unreal.
Right, so I know. So we got approached by two companies, one called Gwatkin Cider and one called Limestone Brewery. Gwatkin Cider, we have a 6% cider called Burnt Out Rec.
Okay.
You can check it out online and you can buy it, you can order it, they'll send it to you. And we have the ale, which is 7%, and we have the beer spirit there, which is 41%. And it's doing very well. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people in Ireland who'd be very interested in getting it.
Yeah.
We've had pictures sent to us from all around the world with people who have bought it and sent us the pictures. So, you know, it's a funny old game. But, yeah, it happened. And we said, yeah, of course we'd love to be involved in that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
At this stage, I just want to thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and being part of my journey by bringing me along on part of your journey. I'm a big fan of what I've heard because I hadn't heard of Burnt Out Rec before contact was made between us. But I have to say, it's right up my street for rock and roll. And what I always love about chatting to people in bands is then when I go afterwards to listen to the music, I always tend then to listen to it with different ears because I've heard some of the stories behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for having us on. I've enjoyed it. It's been a good crack, as you say, you know, and it's just what it's all about, isn't it? You know, these days, you know.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 4Play. If you're an artist or a band and you're interested in getting in touch, then you can do so in many different ways. You can email me at podcast4play@gmail.com, on Twitter at podcast4play, on Facebook at 4Play Music Podcast, and on Instagram at 4Play Music Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again, and we'll chat soon.